Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casino. Nothing else comes close.
That's a joke. That's an absolute joke is what it is.
I've seen enough of this season.
I've seen enough of him that it's a joke. And we get a penalty on the play? That's a joke. That's the definition of a joke right there. Because he's reacting because he got hit and the officials don't see that? That is a joke. Suspend him. Get him out of the game. I've had enough of that.
Not Lindy Ruff on John Cooper, but perhaps the sentiments of you and the Saberhood today. Welcome in. It's Sabres Live. The studio feels a lot bigger at the moment. Marty is on a boat. More on that coming up. But obviously, the naming of the coach of the year yesterday and the name not being Lindy Ruff is disappointing for many. John Cooper does cop the award for the first time in his career, which might also be described as a joke based on the incredible record and resume and Stanley Cup wins that he has amassed over the last decade and a half with the Tampa Bay Lightning. But if we're just going to focus on Lindy Ruff and how he became a finalist and how close he actually came to winning this award. In fact, it was so close, him being second to John Cooper by just 3 voting points. This was the second closest, ironically, to the time where Lindy won the award 20 years ago over Peter Laviolette of the Hurricanes by 1. So Cooper at 226, Lindy Ruff at 223, the incredible turnaround of Dan Muse and the Penguins at 199. And you go down the list and it's Bednar and San Luis and Travis Green, Tockett, Sturm, Brindamore, Gullitson, Hines, Quenneville, Tourigny. And dare I say, another enormous joke from the voting standpoint, that Ryan Warsawski of the Sharks earned 1 point. 1 point earned by the coach who helped the greatest turnaround among any of the NHL's 32 clubs this year. San Jose went from 52 to 86 or 88, and you know, like, that stuff to me needs to be recognized. And we knew when the finalists were announced this year that it seemed like it was East Coast bias and heavy on the Eastern Conference. Sometimes that's just the nature of the game, and you saw massive improvements in the East, but you didn't see one greater than what Buffalo under Lindy Ruff made across the league when you measure all of the factors. The weight of carrying 14 years of no playoffs. The weight of in-season being at the bottom of the conference. The weight of not having, like some of the other teams, a bona fide MVP candidate or a Vezina Trophy candidate like Cooper would have in Tampa. Obviously, San Jose had Celebrini and maybe not an awful lot else. But the hard part for me, like whether it's maturity and therapy and at times medication to help all of the above. Like, I'm not going to sit here and get like super animated about, you know, the loss of a coaching award. In fact, all of this for me from Lindy's standpoint is tempered because John Cooper should have won this award. It feels like a million years ago. His journey to the NHL, his presence among those behind the bench, his demeanor, the way he treats people, the way he interacts with people. For me, personally speaking, I love every single thing about John Cooper. Always have been fascinated by his, you know, emergence as a coach and how he is just one and one and one. But it's almost impossible to believe that Lindy didn't win it this time based on everything we have talked about extensively since his return, but most importantly since December. And when you're looking, like, what's the most important thing in this? It's as a coach. It's empowering, it's creating a belief and allowing people to take on roles that many might have seemed like they weren't destined to have. And that's where the beauty of this team under Lindy, to me, took shape this year. And why, even in more recent days since the season came to an end, why we talk excitedly about the next guys that can come in and reestablish, in the case of Jiří Kulík, but Noah Austlin, Konsta Helenius, like, you have to have that trust from the coach, which then goes through every player. And I feel this is a time where we're seeing it in the Sabres the most in an awfully long time. And Lindy obviously has a huge, huge responsibility in that. But he is the runner-up for Coach of the Year this year. The Jack Adams goes to John Cooper. Marty's going to join us a little later in the show. Darren Dreger joins us right now, our hockey insider from TSN. Dregs, do you have a thought on Coach of the Year and John Cooper finally winning it and not Lindy?
With all due respect to Lindy, to John, to Dan Muse, to all of those who were in the top five of voting, I don't have a vote. I'm not a voter, so I cannot share in the blame. I think they're all equally deserving. I think Lindy Ruff did a masterful job with the Buffalo Sabres. And I'm not saying that in jest. I mean, you do have to think back to when the turnaround started in Buffalo, right? And it was around the time that Kevin Adams was let go as general manager. And, you know, so the roster, in essence, belongs to Kevin Adams. But I don't recall another time where a general manager was fired and the club took off, right? I mean, that normally doesn't happen. But a coach change most definitely can influence that process. 100% it can. So as much as I always start with giving the players credit because they're the ones out there, you know, it's the blood, the sweat, the tears, the execution, all of that. It does feel like maybe there was another wake-up call established in that front office change where maybe Lindy and the coaching staff said, guys, enough of the excuses. We're a talented team. Let's stop, you know, worrying about what we're not doing and start doing what we're capable of doing. So given his experience, I was a bit surprised. You know, John Cooper should have won the Jack Adams before now. Who's kidding?
Correct.
Who?
Correct.
Of course he should
have. It's laughable he hadn't.
Yeah, this has been a miss to this point. But because of everything that Lindy did and the Buffalo Sabres were able to accomplish, I can appreciate the outrage. I'm just happy that I wasn't part of the privileged voters.
Did you have a vote at some point in your career?
I don't believe I have. No. I voted way back in the day, and I can't really tell the full story on this because it's jaded and it's sordid. And I just, I had a vote way back when on the general managers, the executive of the year.
Yeah.
But no, I've, you know, the broadcasters, as we know, are the voters. And I don't even think way back in the day when we were national rights holders, I had a vote at that point.
Yeah, that's why I was curious about that. And then when I was looking through the tabulation of the votes, I, you know, added up the number of first place votes. So you have 99 votes.
You know,
99, like, so interesting number. And
it is,
you know, and it was reasonably close among first place votes, and obviously Lindy comes up shy.
Yeah.
It's a talking point. It's whatever. It's talk radio. You know, it's sports talk television. I mean, it is
what it is, tougher. Right? So. It is, but let me just interject something to wrap this up. And look, we can quarrel with the outcome all we want. I hope for the sake of process that anyone who is privileged with a vote gave it serious consideration. You know, it wasn't, oh, John Cooper hasn't won to this point. I mean, okay, but the Tampa Bay Lightning were pushed out by the Montreal Canadiens in a 7-game series in round one, in round one. So that kind of stuff kind of matters. And I always think of the voting that I have to go through on all the major awards and whatnot. And then furthermore, I used to have a vote for the Conn Smythe. And I'm not taking credit, and I'm not boasting when I say this. I removed myself from that process because I don't, like, I'm not traveling throughout the Stanley Cup playoffs. And for me, I think that's an important distinction. You have to pay attention to everything that's going on in every series to have an educated and responsible vote for the Conn Smythe.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a great point because I think that's it's why people become so passionate in their responses to awards like this, because it is, it can be viewed as almost very local, right? You're naturally going to get your regional support of whoever ends up winning this. But the beauty of sports is when you care enough, and to your point, like being there as a fan, which a fan does pretty much every day, and they see things that they attach themselves to that obviously nobody else outside of the market is ever going to see, because you don't have time to see it and ingest all of what happens in every market, right? So I appreciate your integrity with the Conn Smythe. I think it's incredibly valid, and who knows where it's going to go this year. It's game two tonight. We have seen the team that has won game two win the cup for the last 10 years, ironically. The last team to win a game two of the final and lose, John Cooper's Lightning in 15 against the Hawks. But what do you make now that we're heading into game two after you get the pause and the dust settling on the heels of a game one that we witnessed?
Well, I taped a podcast with Ray Ferraro earlier today, and he described it beautifully. He said, it's just on the outside of being must win for the Carolina Hurricanes. And it does sound a little far-fetched, because it is only game two and they lost a game. I mean, it's not like they're trailing by two or three games here. Mm-hmm. But the numbers are what they are, and the numbers don't just include looking forward here. I think the numbers suggest or state that the team that goes up to Love in the Stanley Cup final ultimately wins, like, what, 50-5, I think the record is. Like, it's heavily favored. But you have to look back when you consider the Vegas Golden Knights and why it is so important at Carolina levels this series. I mean, what is it, 7 straight wins in the postseason for the Vegas Golden Knights? And it's not just that, it's how they're doing it, you know? Yeah. So, you know, they face the adversity in game one, down 2-0 relatively quickly. Carter Hart makes it save on, I guess it was a Stankoven on the breakaway, I believe it was. You know, otherwise it's 3-0, and the hill even gets steeper at that point, and they claw back. Now you go back to game three, the Western Conference final against Colorado, and they were down 3-0 and found a way to chew their way back and ultimately sweep the Avalanche, which is unthinkable when you say it out loud. So there are so many different reasons why Carolina needs to win game two, but it kind of feels like they're going to, Duffer. It does to me. I mean, if you believe in gut feels or instincts or any of that, Carolina's a really, really good team, but they have not faced a team like the Golden Knights yet.
Well, history, obviously, and most recently, is a good teacher, because the Canes did respond to their early setback against Montreal the right way. Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, this is such a coin flip series to me. And especially, you know, the Vegas angle, almost their story of the season was just how meh they were, and especially in games for like first periods and second periods.
Yeah.
And yet, even though it was kind of a pedestrian season, they were the best third period team. And then all of a sudden, that thing is the thing that fuels them again and again and again here in the postseason. And so I love that. If you're going to hang your hat on one stat, I'd rather it be how you finish. And Vegas has finished incredibly well in games this year, and we're seeing it again right now. But you did mention Colorado, and so I want your initial belief here as to what truly is next for this organization now that McFarland has taken his GM hat to Nashville.
Yeah, well, first of all, let's just talk about that for a moment, because this felt like one of those things where there's just too much smoke around it for there not to be fire. And I'm talking about the speculation around McFarland connecting to the Nashville Predators while the Avalanche are still in the playoffs. I mean, we as insiders were openly speculating on it, and you know, it didn't make sense, but it did when all of a sudden, okay, we're not getting any sort of reaction from our sources in Colorado or Nashville, for that matter, who just, they wouldn't return texts, they wouldn't return calls. So it felt like there was something developing in that regard. And Nashville gets a heck of an executive in Chris McFarland, and McFarland gets, you know, a promotion. it's a big job. And yep. It was obviously a job that he couldn't get with the Colorado Avalanche, both in term and money. So he's allowed to improve his quality of professional life, and that's what he's done here. I had a back and forth with Rob Blake as soon as this was announced. And, you know, I think most of us would consider Rob Blake to be an obvious candidate, right? If Joe Sakic is not looking to hold down the GM role for an extended period of time, then why wouldn't an experienced guy like Rob Blake be considered? And not that he's unwilling to consider it. The messaging that I got back, Duffer, is that it might be a little soon for him to take on another GM role. And I said, okay, well, is there any chance you just slide in to help your old buddy Joe in some capacity in the Avs front office? And he goes, well, that hasn't been discussed. And frankly, I think that Rob Blake is at a place in his life with family and other things that he's still recharging the batteries. And, you know, he's still doing what you're allowed to do as a husband, as a father, you know, as a son, all of those things. So it will be interesting to see how long the Avs take to do replace, if they do. You know, maybe Sakic has the juices flowing again with all the business he's going to have to look after, starting with, you know, the combine now and then the draft right around the corner. So he's got a lot of work to do in a short period of time.
Do you think there is appetite for change is wrong? Short leash, maybe wrong too, but like what, when you look at Bednar in Colorado and Brunett in Nashville, yeah. Like, how long are we going to see both these guys in their respective positions?
Yeah, it feels like if there's a shorter leash, it would be around Andrew Brunette. And I think, you know, Brunette is a good coach. Mm-hmm. I do. And Barry Trotz has been very loyal to Andrew Brunette. I mean, he wouldn't have put him on the bench if he didn't believe that he was a decent head coach. And, you know, there have been examples of where, you know, well, I think of Florida, of course, where Brunette just kind of more or less got pushed aside, clearly.
Yep.
The Bednar scenario, I think the only reason that we were willing to wonder about his future was because of how staggering the 4-game sweep was at the hands of the Vegas Golden Knights. But it quieted for me when Nate MacKinnon came out and said what he said about Jared Bednar as his head coach and just gave flower after flower after flower. Okay, so you're talking about your superstar forward here, you know, not only endorsing, but literally saying, I can't imagine another coach coaching me or the Avalanche. Okay, well, there's not that to see here. Everybody move on. That's how I would feel if I were in management of the Avalanche. But I believe off top of my head, he's going into the final year of his contract in Colorado. I'm not one that believes in, what do they call it, where you go into the final year of your contract. Yeah, lame duck stuff. I don't buy that for a minute. I don't. I mean, look what Edmonton just did with Chris Knobloch. So anything is possible, right?
Dude, I was just scrolling the Edmonton newspapers 2 days ago, and it said, good news, Chris Knobloch's extension kicks in 30 days from now. And I'm like, oh, my. But from lame duck to lame fishing efforts, we have breaking news, Dregs. The where is Marty?
I know where Marty is.
Look at this. This is clearly AI. And obviously, I asked Marty before the show started, I said, give me one word as to why you're not here. And he says, lack of fishing. So I don't know if he's had breaking news here within the first 20 minutes of our show, but that looks impressive at the very least of the Alumni Fishing Derby.
Yeah, he landed that beauty, and I think he's got lunch for you guys all lined up as early as tomorrow, because that's what we call a keeper. That's a keeper out west.
Do you have a trophy fish you've hooked over the years?
I've got a few. I'm not bragging. It's true. I landed a big northern pike years ago as a kid on Lake of the Prairies back, and we had it mounted, is what they call, right? I don't know what happened to it. I think my parents eventually just said, I mean, it's creepy having this thing hang on the wall, so let's just move on. Well, but yeah, I've got a master angler walleye and a master angler perch, so I've had a few.
Well, these segues just naturally continue. Will Jarmo Kekalainen land another big fish imminently?
Are you talking about trade? Or are you talking about keeping what he has and Alex Tuch?
I think
all of the above.
All of the above, but you and I and, you know, this show has certainly exhausted already the free agent talk, unless there was something new on talk. But I think more specifically, Darren, you've talked about this a lot, and that is the pursuits that Kekalainen had at the deadline. And whether now is a time to revisit, you know, going after things that were of interest to you. And we've, you know, Danny Briere was in here 2 days ago, and we were talking about the underwhelming nature of free agency this year from an unrestricted standpoint across the league. And Danny just looked at us and said, there are always players available. And
he's right.
And he's right. And I think that's why everybody's appetite, moistens a little bit here as you get set for, you know, what's to come before the draft, at the draft, after the draft.
Yeah. So Jarmo's a tough nut to crack. He is a very good general manager. He is an excellent person. I've been around him for many, many years at GM meetings, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Anybody who says or implies that they're talking to Jarmo and he's telling them what his plan is, isn't telling the truth. He does not play the game that way. He will politely decline and say, you know, I don't comment on these things. And then you have a nice conversation about pickleball or something else, and he's happy to engage. I guess what I wonder about, Brian, is what did Jarmo learn about his Sabres team that he didn't know going into the trade deadline?
Yeah.
Because the information that I was reporting on the possibilities of big trades with St. Louis were impeccably sourced. That was happening with Robert Thomas. Mm-hmm. It was happening. And Colt Parayko potentially was a part of that. I mean, go down the list. But that was because Jarmo looked at Robert Thomas being an experienced center available and thought, okay, that's what we need. It gives us even more power up the middle. He didn't want to give up on Josh Norris. Mm-hmm. That's really why that deal didn't happen. So now you go through the success of the Buffalo Sabres in two rounds, more or less success. I mean, come on, they lost game seven, right? And did he learn something about the specifics of individual players that maybe have allowed him to pause and go, well, maybe I don't have to spend and give these quality prospects up to acquire that type of player, Robert Thomas or a veteran defenseman? I don't know if he needs to revisit. So we'll see. But I wouldn't call it an update. Here's what I'm hearing around the free agent pool, right? I'm hearing that there's really been no progress in the discussions on Alex Tuch. And as we're having this conversation, I believe he's going to the open market on July 1st as an unrestricted free agent. Not shocking. And there's time with Benson, right? I mean, there are different categories of free agents here. Mm-hmm. And we've all heard, you know, I mean, that kid's been showered with praise from everyone around the Buffalo Sabres organization, including his head coach, and he should be. So he is a top priority. So none of that is breaking news, but just kind of a day-by-day update.
Well, to me, now that we're sitting here on June 4th, and the lack of free agents and the appetite for so many teams to make change, add payroll based on salary cap space, wouldn't you think St. Louis could get potentially even more for Robert Thomas right now than what they might have been asking for at the deadline? Like, I guess another way to ask it is, like, what is the value of Robert Thomas right now across the NHL as one example?
As one example. And what is the influence of Doug Armstrong? Because moving forward, it's Alex Steen's team as general manager. Lots of speculation out there. And I don't know how in-depth the Blues have actually had these conversations internally. And what I'm talking about here is the potential of a splash involving one of the top picks. Okay. San Jose has made it clear that they're listening on the second pick overall. You know, Vancouver to a lesser degree, sure. Absolutely, the Blackhawks at four, and then you've got the New York Rangers at five and go down the list from there. Now, one of the teams in the top six told me that they didn't think that San Jose was willing to drop below four. Well, I guess, but it depends on what type of NHL player you're getting if you're trading the second pick overall. Mm-hmm. And if Mike Greer looks at Robert Thomas or Colton Parayko as an example or somebody else, and St. Louis covets that number two pick because they've got the other Stenberg brother, right, in St. Louis, in their organization. So you want to connect the dots. You look at Stenberg, who's likely going to go two or three, right, in the draft. Some have them as high as one.
Yeah.
So I think that there are definite possibilities that St. Louis is going to be a big game player, you know, whether it's purely for draft picks or whether or not they're moving out Thomas or Parayko or Binnington or something else. Mm-hmm. We'll have to wait and see.
That trio could largely help San Jose. I would be less optimistic on
could
Binnington.
Could help Toronto.
Yeah, they could too. Yeah. Right? Like it's pretty remarkable. We have.
If you're going all in and not all in, but if you're trying to encourage Austin Matthews to stay beyond the year, because that's really what we're talking about.
Sure.
You know, maybe you do. Maybe you swing for the fence. Maybe you look at Gavin McKenna and go, okay, well, he's a winger, and maybe he's a foundational piece, as often first overall draft picks are. But he's 3, 4, 5 years away from being an impact guy. We're not going to have Austin Matthews around for that long. So maybe we consider it. I mean, that's just pie in the sky stuff. But it's what we talk about this time of year.
It is. What do you got planned for the weekend?
Might be some travel in my works here. We're just kind of, you know, we'll see how game two goes tonight between the Golden Knights and the Carolina Hurricanes. I mean, just the idea that Marner and the Vegas Golden Knights could win the Stanley Cup and potentially Mitch Marner be a Conn Smythe winner. Yeah. I mean, that's just salacious stuff. And I think TSN would want me to be part of that coverage, Bob.
I'll be covering Brett Howden's Conn Smythe win. So
that'll
be more exciting for me. All right, Drags. Thank you very much. Enjoy the weekend.
All right. You too, Duffer.
All right. We still have Marty making an appearance here on the show. And, of course, Shayna Goldman tomorrow. Stay with us. Sabres Live rolls on after this.
Get back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
NHL Scouting Combine continuing this week here in Buffalo. This is Marty's pass. I assumed he was, you know, going through the interview process. He may yet go through the physical testing process at the end of the week, but he is putting himself through new paces today. The Sabres Alumni Fishing Derby. And we showed you with Darren Dreger in the last half hour the big catch. We now have video proof of Martin reeling one in. This is a healthy, healthy win for number 43. And he will be joining us in mere moments to discuss, who knows, maybe his team were the big winners today. Ultimately, it's just a, you know, incredible event, which over the years, I'm hoping that a lot of people in our community have been able to take part. It's always, you know, fun to rub shoulders with alumni. And when you think of the contributions of many of those alumni, you think of Rob Ray, his King Clancy win, and wouldn't you know it, another former Sabre won that award from the NHL today. Marcus Foligno has joined his brother Nick as a King Clancy Award winner. This is truly remarkable and not surprising in the least, because this award, the King Clancy Memorial Trophy, was first given out in 87-88 to the player who best exemplifies leadership qualities on and off the ice and has made a noteworthy humanitarian contribution in his community. We mentioned Razor. He won it back in 98-99. The list of character people that have earned this distinction is a long one. And honestly, it's a list that really does bring great joy if you're a fan of the game and fan of good people. And Nick Foligno won this award in
2017 when he was a member of the Blue Jackets. And now, someone that we basically watched grow up here in Buffalo, his brother Marcus, has earned this award. We have done a lot this year, I think, through our show and our Sabres broadcast, certainly, to continue to highlight the incredible work, the passionate work of the Foligno's and their fight against cancer, all in the name of their mom, Janice, who passed, you know, back when Marcus was just entering into the realm of being drafted and becoming a professional. And there are endless examples of how good the Foligno family is, truly, across the board. And it's days like this where you feel very lucky to meet people in your life that have an impact. And this honor could not go to a more deserving player in the NHL than Marcus Foligno. I mean, we almost never go a day around here without thinking about RJ. And I think back to the earliest trips that Marcus appeared on with the Sabres, and the respect that he has for others, and knowing everything about this organization and how proud he was to wear the Sabres colors and the uniform. And with that comes the immediate respect that you have for the legendary Rick Jeanneret. I think there's never been a miss when it comes to this kind of humanitarian, like, just decency, human decency. And it's funny because, you know, we often refer to producer Sam, who's on the other side of the glass here, pulling this show together on a daily basis. And I can't not think of Sam when I think of Marcus and Nick Foligno, because years ago, we found ourselves in Sudbury, Ontario, the home of the Foligno's, during the summertime to shoot a Beyond Blue and Gold at Nick's place, which, you know, the whole family was building even greater roots there. And just to see how they interact as a family and how, in the best way possible, they pushed and pushed and pushed each other from a physical training standpoint. Like, look it up on YouTube. I hope it's still out there. The Foligno's are truly a gift and have been ever since Mike arrived in the NHL, and obviously it was Detroit to start, and huge trade brings them to Buffalo, and he became a fan favorite here as a scorer and a fighter and a passionate, you know, representation of this organization. I couldn't be happier. The NHL awards are done so differently now, with these, you know, as you just saw in the video with Marcus being surprised, like John Cooper was yesterday at Children's Hospital. And so these things kind of sneak up on me a little bit, as opposed to just waiting for an award show. And this was a great way to start today, to see Marcus grab the King Clancy. Marty Baron is with us, post-fishing derby. Did you win based on that enormous catch we have video of?
No, I did not win. That was about 9 pounds. And
really?
My captain on the boat.
20.
Probably. Camera had it, not just on the fish, on me too. But here's the thing, Duffer. The captain didn't even wait to get off the boat and measure and weigh the fish. He cut it up in fillet. I got it on ice in my truck right now. I'll be eating that tonight. But he was on the phone with other boats, and he's like, yeah, that's not gonna do it. We had a great day on the lake, but the lake is warming up, and the fishing is slowly kind of going to be quiet here for the next few days. So had a fantastic group. It was awesome. A great captain who knew George Babcock really well. So we told some George stories, and it was awesome. But the fishing was very slow today, but it was a fun day, that's for sure.
Where exactly were you?
So we're in Olcott on Lake Ontario. So we had, you know, a bunch of alums, obviously. Gionta, Coletta, Shannon, Muni, Himalev, Ledger, a bunch of the guys, and then a bunch of clients too. And we all had boats. So there was about four or five people on the boats. And we had to wait, though. We're supposed to be in the water by 8 a.m., but we had to wait because our boat did not have the beers on the boat. So we had to wait for somebody to go get the beer and bring it on the boat. So we didn't get off the pier probably by about 8:30, 8:45, but it was already warm. I mean, there's been years that we've done this where we had rain jackets, heated vests, like the full thing. Today, no, it was nice and warm.
Did you happen to find our dream boat, the boat of us?
I did not find the boat of us. I'm still looking for the boat of us. And maybe next year I will have the boat of us. Maybe I'll be a boat captain. I'll tell you this. These guys, they have a great job. They get out in the water in the morning. They go pretty much every day for the whole fishing season. And now they say it's going to be slow for the next little bit here, but it'll pick back up again in like September and October and whatnot. So they're on the boat a lot. It's a great life when it's a day like today.
Would you say that any of the names of the alumni that you mentioned who were in attendance today, would any of them qualify to be on your dream fishing boat? Like if you viewed this, I'm assuming like a golf foursome, like who's on your dream fishing boat?
Well, I think Rob Ray would be on my dream fishing boat because number one, he's big into hunting and fishing, and he would be like an extra deckhand. Like he would help, you know how Razor is when it's his thing? Like he wants to take care of it. And I think he would be a fantastic help on the boat. He doesn't drink, so that would be more beers for the rest of us, the boat of us. So that would be good as well. And I think there'd be some great stories to be told. The energy of Grant Ledger would be exciting on the boat. Ledgy, like he gets so excited about everything. He would be a lot of fun for sure. I had just a chat with Pat Coletta. Like PK is just great. Tim Kennedy was here too. Cody McCormick. There was a lot of guys. So I think we would have a full boat. If you had me picking what my boat would be like, I think it would be a 20 people boat, not like a 4-person boat.
If you could,
Lindy Ruff was here too, by the way. Lindy was there. I think I would have Lindy
Jack
on my
Adams
boat.
Wasn't.
Jack Adams was not, and that was. Look, let's talk about this a little bit. So, was I surprised that John Cooper won?
This is Dazzled and Disturbed, by the way.
Oh, yeah, is it Dazzled and Disturbed?
I think
I'm not surprised that John Cooper won, because we all know when it comes to voting, especially on those things, it goes to like, well, he's never had one. And, you know, like John Cooper coached a great season. You know, there was injuries in Tampa. He did a great job. But you do have an MVP candidate in Nikhil Kucherov. You do have a Vezina Trophy candidate and winner in Vasilevskiy. You have massive, massive talent. And I do think that should probably make voters think, okay, who else had a fantastic season? Lindy Ruff had a great season. And Lindy Ruff, like Dahlin had a fantastic season. Thompson and some of the young guys, I think that's all part of Lindy Ruff's coaching. And I think I would have definitely voted Lindy number one. He had 67 votes. John Cooper had more first place votes, but John Cooper wasn't even close to Lindy in the amount of people that voted him in the top three. Some people left him off the top three altogether. I felt like maybe, and it was only by 3 points. It was tight, but Lindy's my guy.
Just a 4-point improvement for the Lightning this year as opposed to the 30-point improvement by the Sabres. Those are just two measures, obviously. But anyway, it is what it is.
You know what? It was interesting to look at the whole list of who was on the list.
That's how I started the show. I was freaking out more about Ryan Warsawski and his 36-point improvement, and he got one measly third-place vote. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
I mean, Andre Tourigny got more third-place vote than Ryan Warsawski. I'm like, what? Look, Marty St. Louis in Montreal, like you could say like he had a fantastic year and everything that he's done. Rick Tocchet in Philly. There's some great candidates, but that Ryan Wasarski won third place vote.
Yeah.
And it's got to be a San Jose writer or something that put him there.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, what? Do people not watch the Sharks? Duffer, you got to get on that drum and bang it.
Oh, my gosh. I could not bang the drum any harder. Most people can't stay up that late. I don't know. Are we doing Dazzle and Disturb? We're just going, let's just go into this. This doesn't even need an intro, Marty. A police officer was arrested and fired for allegedly pointing a gun at a fellow officer who microwaved fish at the police station. This is out of the New York Post.
Okay, so for those that don't work in an office, when there's a community microwave, you better be careful with what you put in there. You got to clean it up after yourself, the smell in the office and all that. Now, you don't pull a gun on somebody for going against microwave etiquette. So that's a little bit out there, but I can understand the anger.
Oh my goodness.
About somebody microwaving fish in the office, but you got to control yourself.
You know who would never microwave fish in the office place? The Foligno's. They would never. They're too kind.
They're too nice. You know, they would never do that. Now, I've used the office microwave a couple of times to reheat like noodles and pasta, and then sometimes the red sauce splashes a little bit. Like, just wipe it down. Take a paper towel, wipe it down. Like, that's what you got to do to the microwave. Let's go.
Your presence is still here in the studio today. I don't know if you can see this.
Oh, yeah, I can see my pass
for the scouting
my combine.
Are you going to be able to go through the physical testing this weekend?
I'm not going through the testing.
Oh.
I may walk around and just check it out. I'm not doing the testing. We were talking about that yesterday. I was talking to my parents about it. And, you know, I went to Montreal. My brother went to Toronto. I'm like, there's so much better set up here in Buffalo than what we did back then. But I'm like, yeah, but I would never want to do the testing again. So that was not a beautiful day for me.
Thank you for checking in from the Alumni Fishing Derby.
Who's going to win the game tonight? Did you watch the NBA last night, by the way?
No, we're going to answer those questions when we come back here on Sabres Live. Stay with us.
Get back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
He may not have been here to start, but he's here to finish, which is kind of the story of his career, isn't it, Marty? I mean, you were always there at the end for everybody, right?
Yeah, and unless I was telling a story about how early in my career, I was like, I hope Hasek sucks tonight so I can get in and play. And then by the end of my career, I was like, don't look at me. I don't want to go in. I want to stay on the bench. So I was there to maybe finish early, but not late.
Well, NBA started exactly as I expected. You were probably excited about this last night.
I was so excited about it. And what a start by the Spurs. And they were up by 14, and I'm like, oh, yes. But then you, like, saw a little bit of the Knicks do that. They did that all year long.
Yeah,
they did. Jalen Brunson, he was so good, and, you know, it just made a difference. And, yeah, they overpowered the San Antonio Spurs in the fourth quarter. But it was a fun game. Did you realize that was the first game of the NBA final tied after three quarters in, like, 25 years?
Do you think Wemby's wingspan?
Hockey, but
you think Wemby's wingspan would go wall to wall in our studio here?
Probably. No. It's incredible how he's outside of the key, takes a leap, and then can put his arm like Michael Jordan in which was the movie with what is it called again? Where his arm extends. Producer Sam can tell you in his ears because I can't hear him. But anyway,
Sam was already in my ears because he was saying Wemby would have to duck to get into the studio here. So I missed your whole movie reference. Happy 50th to Wayne Primo. How about that?
Hey, Preams, what a guy. You know, obviously,
we're out of time,
he's a big guy. Oh,
we'll
no, I can't see it. See ya.